It's time to reclaim control, not just of your law firm, but of your life. Welcome to the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. Discover how early adopters are leveraging cutting-edge legal tech and early adoption strategies to lead the industry while embracing work-life balance. Unlock the secrets to a thriving law practice and a balanced, happy life with the Law Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 402 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, along with my co-host, Sam Malai. Sam, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. I love the energy, Neil.
Yeah. Episode 402. Here we go down for the next 400 episodes of The Law Entrepreneur. And today, I'm really excited because, you know, I like to think of myself as a techie. I like to think of myself on the cutting edge, but frankly, I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't stayed quite as up to date on some of these things as I could have. And in particularly, you know, this hot topic of artificial intelligence. I know, you know, I would go to several conferences and they were talking about, you know, what artificial intelligence is going to bring to the legal space and is it going to do away with attorneys or paralegals or what have you. And frankly, everybody's presentation seem to be, in my humble opinion, very similar without a lot of in-depth technical content. And so I wasn't able really to grasp what role AI may or may not play in the future of law. But there's a guy out on the West Coast who happens to be my co-host here, who's had his thumb on the pulse of what's going on in the world of artificial intelligence with respect to the legal space. And we're going to spend some time today picking his brain. And I'm going to ask some of the stupid questions that, you know, I don't know the answer to. But I think if I have that question, my sense is that a lot of our listeners may have the same type of question. So for a certifiable cutting-edge expert on artificial intelligence, we can't do any better than Sam. And I know, Sam, you have spent some time thinking about this and working with this, and in fact, have recently attended a number of different conferences and events that are kind of crystallizing the whole AI space. And we want to talk about some of those today.
For sure. And I probably have the three best resources to share these insights. And then let me just share the resources first. The first one was is the Singularity Conference. It was an AI conference, one of the most popular AI conferences in the world. I attended 3 days of it. So while everyone else was working, I was sitting there listening in throughout the entire day, took a lot of good notes, a lot of stuff that I think that are going to be very crucial for us as lawyers to know what's going on. So the first insights will be from there, from that conference. Second was just last week, OpenAI had the huge announcement about their latest model. I'll be sharing about exactly what ChatGPT 4.0 is, how it's going to help us run our law firms. And the third resource is just a day after OpenAI's announcement was actually Google's AI releases. A lot of an assortment of releases that came, actually 44 new updates. But I'm going to summarize that for you and kind of give you literally the most up-to-date AI updates that's applicable for lawyers.
Great. Well, I have to tell you that I did kind of tune in to the ChatGPT 4.0 rollout, and I've got, you know, for the very first time, I have it on my phone. So I have had an opportunity to kind of explore that a little bit, and it's very exciting and very interesting. So tell us a little bit, Sam, about what, well, first off, where was the Singularity Conference? I'm just curious.
I believe, I'm not sure where it was, but most of the attendees were virtual. In other words,
virtual.
Yeah. So what I know, they had hundreds of attendees, very high level. And for me, as I was listening in, everything was just like, how am I going to apply this to law? How am I going to apply this to legal space? So let's go through it. First big insight that I got was the importance of the law of accelerating returns, And what that says is that most of our perspectives as humans and the way that our brain works is very in a linear fashion. We think in linear terms. Even they had some scientific research with that even our DNA is made in linear form. But instead, technology has brought about exponential change. And basically our mind can't even wrap around the quickness of that change. And so we can never anticipate, as much as we like to anticipate the change, our minds are just not meant and created to anticipate the change. So whatever you assume is going to change, just multiply that by 10 times faster. So some quick little data is like AI is going to get 1600 times better within 2 years. When you hear that, you're like 1600 times, like there's no way that your brain can fathom what that means. And that's exactly what AI brings, this unfathomable, quick changes constantly. That's exponential. Second part, second idea was a big common theme at the conference was don't fear, don't fear it. Lean towards it. Understand how AI works and understand that AI also creates opportunities. Harness AI to help solve our most pressing problems. So kind of, having your right perspective towards AI. Does it bring about a lot of disruption and potentially a lot of harm? Sure. But I think if we focus our attention and our efforts into the opportunities that it brings, I think that's where it could be really life-changing. The next important note was data, the importance of data, and that essentially data is the asset. And if you have a unique data set, some kind of data set, and that could be data set that's maybe applied for your law firm, maybe you have something that you know about your clients or your prospects, that is what makes AI valuable. So start thinking about that is what data do I have, whether it be when you're a law firm or what I've been doing is I've been building out my personal data of resources of information that I've built up. I put it all into Evernote because I know when Evernote has a huge AI update, I'm able to tap into my personal data and pull out some insights that maybe even ChatGPT doesn't have. Along with that, there was a lot of stuff about how to evaluate AI investments. Just very quickly for people that are like considering getting into AI companies, essentially investors want to evaluate based on three things. Number one is they want to evaluate the problem. How big is the problem that you're solving? Is the problem growing? Is the problem something that people urgently need now? Is it something that's a need versus a want? What's the cost of this problem? What's the quantity of this problem? The frequency of this problem? So all about how big is the problem that you're looking to solve with AI. Number two is what's the potential solution to this problem that you're trying to resolve? Is the problem clearly stated? Is it narrowly defined? Do you have first experience with this solution? Is it solvable by you? Are customers willing to pay for it? So kind of tapping into what the potential is. And third is, what's your unfair advantage when it comes to what you're building out? Now, do you have a special talent, special data, special product? Is there a special monopoly? Is there some special network effect when it comes to this? And for me, I know somehow whatever I do going forward has to have an AI component in there, has to. It's a requirement. I'm not willing to do any new business unless somehow it has some kind of AI advantage to it. Besides that, there was also, they shared that younger entrepreneurs will be entering the space because it lowers the barrier of entry and there'll be an increase in fractional founders. These are people that are going to launch startups while they're in school or while they have jobs. And a lot of times, it was one or the other. You're either working on a startup or you have a job or, if you have your own business. But now there's kind of like a mix of these types of people who are kind of doing both at the same time. The other kind of practical for lawyers AI kind of line that I heard was AI creates a lot of problems with evidence and prosecutions. So yes, they were very straight up to say, yes, this will be a huge issue when it comes to making sure that evidence is what it is. Is it real? Is this evidence real or was this manufactured by AI? And yes, it will cause a lot of issues with false prosecutions and things like that. And there is a lot of potential manipulation with AI. And I think it's very important to not just, again, learn about the opportunities, but also understand how AI could be manipulated so that we're not taken advantage of. And again, these are kind of big themes. And as we do our episodes, these themes we're going to bring it out and dig deeper. But I just want to touch upon it. And I'm sure, you have some questions about these things.
Yeah, I do. Let me unpack a little bit of this, or try and unpack a little bit of this. The acceleration path that AI is on, that doesn't really surprise me, mainly because I'm old. And, when I started, we had a 128K dial-up connection to a standalone listserv. It was pre-internet. Now I'm mad if I don't get 300 megabyte download on my fiber optic data link. So I can see how that has manifested itself. I mean, I used to carry around a shoebox size 10 megabyte hard drive, and now, you know, we put 10 gigabytes on a keyring. So that I get. Now, what I'm having a hard time getting my head around, Sam, a little bit, is you talked about the importance of data, that the data set is what is where the value is in leveraging AI. And I'm trying to kind of wrap my hands around, what does that mean for an attorney? And let's say I have a data set. I don't even know what my data set is. I mean, I have a database of clients that I've, and all the information associated with who has retained me. I have a database of potential clients or contacts who, for one reason or another, didn't retain me. I have that. I have financial data. So what are like some of the data sets that I would start to kind of think that AI might provide some type of application to?
Good call. And that comes down to kind of AI readiness. And I think even before we get to collecting the data, I think it's be very prudent for lawyers and law firm owners to start incorporating kind of AI policies into their retainer agreements and into their terms of use and privacy policies. Put that in there. Again, artificial intelligence, if you just Google artificial intelligence usage policy, I'm looking at one right in front of me right now. It's kind of touches upon, you know, data privacy, that, you know, potentially, you know, using the data for training, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's crucial, again, for lawyers to be start putting those in there, to start looking to those and proactively doing that now. I think that would be step number one, AI readiness.
I wonder what degree the bar associations are having or helping to provide that something of a template. My general sense is they are all many times frequently a lagging resource.
For sure. And I would assume 98% of the state bars are probably behind on this. Yeah. There could be some that are very proactive on it, props. But yeah, usually it takes time, as you said, just agencies and government just notorious for being late to the game. So, but again, that doesn't mean you not being proactive, finding other resources and doing it. But that'll be my step number one, is make sure that's all added into your retainer agreements and terms of use and privacy policies. Second is, again, I think put into the perspective is like, what information did I have? Well, for the most part, you have your law firm. So I don't know whether we want to get into like what kind of data you pull out from your law firm. Maybe we could dedicate a whole episode to this.
Okay.
But sure. Whatever that means for you, whatever data that you have that's associated with your law firm. And I know this is like a very hot topic, and it's also could be very controversial. And I do think we should probably dedicate a whole episode to this, because we could look into both sides and argue both sides and see, you know.
Well, I'll give you an example. Yeah. Like, so for instance, when somebody says to me, who is your ideal client? I know who that is anecdotally, you know, because I work with all of them. But if I asked an AI engine, what are the common traits or common factors of my ideal clients, or what are the most prevalent? I think I might gain some insight into who really is my ideal client, or who makes up the largest segment of my client base. Is that kind of a practical application?
Totally, 100%. And I've actually done this kind of exercise to help me figure out who I am. But yeah, it could definitely be applied to, you know, who are your clients. And it fills in the holes. It also affirms and also gives you context of who will be similar, which is what a lot of people miss. I got these people down, but who are similar, that have the same common characteristics, that could also have the same problems as these people. And now all of a sudden it exposes you to this new subset that you never even considered. And for whatever reason, there's an association there, and that could also be applied. And that's actually one of the strategies of scaling, is, you know, going horizontal, basically taking the same recipe and just going, not the same practice, but different practice types or different niches and things like that. So yeah, totally. At the very least, affirmation of what you already know best is very valuable too.
Yeah. Well, you gain insight, you know, the further you dig into the data you have. And I think particularly for solo and small firm practitioners, we don't systematically do that analysis. We kind of We've internalized it because we're hands-on. But as you start to scale and grow, I think you have to take a more systemic approach to doing that analysis. And that's where I think I see the opportunity. You kind of confirmed that for me. So I mentioned that I've just started to dip my toe into this and kind of get hands-on. And I did download the new version of ChatGPT. It helped me write a song. I really had a lot of fun with that, asking it to write a particular song around a particular series of events. So I could see really kind of that application. So tell us a little bit about your observations with this new release.
So this is OpenAI's ChatGPT 4.0 update that was announced on May 13th. So what this is basically ChatGPT's new flagship model. It's not ChatGPT 5. It's not like a complete huge change, but it's as big change as it gets. So what are the changes? Number one is 2 times faster, which if you're, somebody who uses ChatGPT on a daily basis, that's one of the things that's kind of annoying. You're sometimes like waiting. We're so used to quick little Google searches. We kind of expect the same. But guess what? Now ChatGPT is literally as quick as Google. You press enter, and you straight up just get it. So that's the first big update. Number two. Yeah,
that was stunning to me.
Yeah.
Okay. When I said, write me a song that deals with breaking up and on a Friday, in Honolulu. And there it was.
And that makes you want to use it more because you're more likely, right? The instant gratification just makes you want to conversate more. And that leads to the second update, which is human-like instant voice assistant. So imagine.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Imagine talking to AI like a human, no lag, literally having a conversation. It sounds, it's a little bit awkward in the beginning when you use it, but it is amazing. And as you shared, Neil, for the most part, this could be used on your phone. And actually, this kind of ties back to the legal space. About 4 months ago, I attended ABA Tech Show, and the theme was, at least a lot of the subjects were about, was about AI. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, let's see what's going on and at the ABA Tech Show. And went through 3 days of the conference, and I realized nobody talked about much about ChatGPT, let alone ChatGPT, the mobile app. And for me, somebody who uses AI a lot, the ChatGPT mobile app was, I think, like one of the biggest breakthroughs. Having quick access to AI that instead of Googling something, I actually ended up a year ago, I replaced my Google on my home screen with ChatGPT to get myself into the habit of using ChatGPT more. And I've been using the mobile. But along with the mobile app comes this cool little button. If you're watching a video, you can see it. If you're not, if you're on a podcast, go download it. It's called, if you just search the App Store for ChatGPT. And then once you log in, right next to the keyboard, you'll find a little headphone icon. You click on that and you'll enter into voice mode. And where you're able to speak and say, hey, I'm doing an episode with Neil Tyra on the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. What do you like about this podcast?
That sounds great. The Law Entrepreneur Podcast is well regarded for its insightful discussions on the business side of law. Neil Tyra does a fantastic job of bringing in knowledgeable guests and exploring practical topics that help lawyers navigate the complexities of running their practices. What aspect of the podcast are you most excited about discussing?
What were the top three themes that Neil Tyra talked about with his guests?
Neil Tyra's podcast, The Law Entrepreneur, often covers themes that are vital for legal professionals looking to run successful practices. The top three themes discussed with his guests include 1, entrepreneurship in law. This theme focuses on the business aspects that lawyers typically do not learn in law school. It includes managing a law firm, marketing strategies, and transitioning from being just a lawyer to also being an entrepreneur.
And on.
Wow. that was pretty impressive. totally unrehearsed, totally unscripted.
Yeah. And again, people are just not used to interacting, but little by little.
Oh, and how smart was that guy too?
It's pretty spot on. I know for me to prepare for these podcasts, I wanted to look up, when did I do the episodes with you? What were the topics we talked about? Who were the most popular guests? What were the most popular themes? It helped me like within a very quick amount of time, do some quick research to be able to be well prepared. So yeah, totally. So that's the second, that was the biggest update. The third is higher limits when it comes to the amount of input that you could add into ChatGPT. So back in the day, it was kind of limited by this many number of pages of PDFs. Pretty much now it's essentially, as much as anybody's concerned, unlimited. You could drop a 100-page PDF document and it's within instantly. It's able to analyze it, give it the top three takeaways. So, you know, you could be able to save a lot of time. So those are the kind of like the three biggest things that came to ChatGPT. And I would say more importantly, it also became free. So ChatGPT 4 was kind of behind the paid plan with ChatGPT Plus for $20 a month, which was, I think, one of the best worthwhile expenses you can have for your law firm. But now it's free. So nobody has any reasons not to get on it. So just a call to action. Number one, go download the ChatGPT mobile app. Number two, go bookmark ChatGPT, put it on your bookmark. And number three, go download the ChatGPT Mac app. They have released it. They haven't officially, they'll let you download it, but when you click on it right now, I think it'll be released probably in the next couple of days. It says you don't have access yet, but that will also be game changing because one of the good parts about the desktop app, Neil, is it allows you to pin it to override any window. So what I'm going to do as soon as it's released, I'm just going to have it on my computer, on my monitor at all times. Literally, it'll be my little companion and actually has components where it's able to read screenshots and your screen and things like that. So as you're working, you have to just click on it and say, take a screenshot of this window and, you know, analyze it or do that or what's the plan or whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things I think that I understood this new version was it very much strengthened the visual analysis. So it can not just work on recorded voice or memorialized text, but also can be applied to analyze images. And to me, that's astonishing.
And nobody at ABA Tech will talk about this at all. It's drove me insane. Like, there's a 3-day conference with probably 60 speakers and nobody mentioned the ChatGPT mobile app. Like, this might be the most practical AI tool that we have and nobody talked about it. And that's when I realized, I'm like, okay. I'm like maybe in the super early innovator.
Yeah, we got to jump on this.
Yeah, we got to jump on this. And again, extra value for you being here to getting these insights because me validating the space, you know, the space is 99% behind. So let's take advantage of this opportunity.
So there's another woman in the legal entrepreneurial space. She's one of the OGs, if you will, Carolyn Elephant, who literally wrote the book on opening a solo practice. She was married to a friend of mine, Bruce Israel, who sadly is no longer with us. Bruce died of brain cancer. But Bruce, I knew him as a martial artist. He was in my martial arts class. But he was one of the very first employees of Google. And he was a pioneer in artificial intelligence as a PhD at University of Maryland. And so although I'm not a big Google fan, I'm a big Google AI, or I have an interest in Google AI because of my personal connection to one of its original researchers. So tell me a little bit about what's been released now in Google I/O.
So Monday was OpenAI's AI announcements. And the very next day, Tuesday, May 14, 2024, Google made their AI announcements. And at the time, I was just trying to get my hands on like the updates when it came to OpenAI. And then Google released their own beasts, which was even, I would say, even more updates that came to Google. Pretty overwhelming, but I'm going to simplify the updates. Number one, Google released Gemini 1.5 Pro. What that means is basically just a smarter, better AI. Again, it expands the number of tokens. Basically, what tokens means is just the amount of data that's able to take in. Essentially, at this point, it's just AI is just instant. Basically, you should expect instant results and unlimited data that you can drop in there. As we mentioned, images, text, PDFs, Google Sheets, Excel files, it's able to handle all of it. Just throw it in there and ask questions. The second update was a feature called Ask Photos, where you're able to basically ask complex questions from your own photo library. So there's an immense amount of data that's in your own photos, you know, what you do, who you spend time with, what time are you out, what time are you at home. And you're able to ask your own, tap into your own data and ask specific questions about specific events, details about specific photos, et cetera. And it's able to tie that in. Number three was Google basically released their Soro competitor. Soro is OpenAI's video generation tool. Well, Google just released their own called Veo, V-E-O, kind of interesting names, Veo and Soro, that allows you to create high quality minute long videos based on text prompts. So whatever you type out within a minute or so, you'll get a video output of whatever you typed out. And this is not publicly released yet. I would assume this will be all released within the next month or two. And this is a huge disruption, Neil, for people that are in video production and the creative space. How do you see this kind of pan out, Neil?
Well, I'm kind of wondering, you know, how is the image created? Is it from source material that the engine has that it's able to then combine in a video production that would appear as if you were shot with a camera? So is that what we're talking about?
It's essentially whatever you want to type out. So
if I said prepare me a video on just on who pays the state tax in Maryland, would it have some talking head?
No, this is more, it's turning kind of scenes. It's a, kind of like, imagine you want to portray a certain scene. So you type out the description of that scene that you could generate. So what I imagine it is, it will be a huge disruption in the ad space. Back in the day, you know, creating video ads, you have to go get a hire a whole team. And actually, I'm actually doing that today. I'm actually going onto the field to record video ads. I probably won't be doing this in a year. I won't need to hire actors and the whole production team and the audio guy to come and do this. I could just say, hey, create a scene of this visual thing that I want you to represent of the potential problems that my potential clients have. That'll be the hook. And then the second scene will be a person speaking to the camera who's going to talk about the solution that they may be entitled to.
I see.
And provide the call to action.
So you essentially provide an overview of the cinematic direction that you want the scene to take and to follow.
Correct.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's huge. Yeah.
That's absolutely.
I feel bad. This is reality. Is, you know, imagine the entire video production, movie production, and show production is at risk. It will take some time. Again, how much time? Nobody knows, because our brain isn't meant to be able to kind of even estimate, but whatever it is, we are headed there. Along with that, there was also been updates with generative, what Google calls generative AI in search, which is very relevant and important for lawyers, especially for my fellow lawyers who spend a lot of money on PPC and AdWords. There is some disruption to come here. How, to what capacity, nobody truly knows. I think Google is trying to figure that out. Google probably has the biggest motivation to try to figure it out, because they have $1 trillion or $2 trillion to reasons to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But just imagine, at least now, it's like when you ask Google, and you could actually, the update is already out there. If you go to Google and you ask questions, well, instead of giving you focusing more on search results where it gives you resources, maybe Google will give you the answer first, and then it will also give you the pages on the back end. But for the most part, the people expect results to come sooner, you know, so you don't have to. Think about it. Like, what if you need an answer? Why do you need to search something, get 10 different sources for you to go each, open up each tab until you get your answer? Just give me the information that I need. Give me the answer that I need. And over time, consumers will expect that. And if Google doesn't, you know, provide that, then people will start jumping ship to, you know, if OpenAI decides to release their own search engine or whatever. So, but that has to be a fine balance to all the services that are right now spending billions of dollars a day on ads to appear on the Google Ads search results and Google LSC search results and all that stuff. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that pans out, how they could find that fine balance, give enough people enough of an answer that they need, which I have some insight today. I think I figured out how it works. Let me just actually share that. So I think what's going to happen is my kind of guess is that it depends on the type of question that's being asked. It's the type of question that people are looking for an answer, then Google is kind of cornered to be able to provide the answer. But if it's a question about finding the resources for like a certain type of lawyer, there'll be integration with the answer with ad placements to provide a options of lawyers, not just one lawyer. If it was just one lawyer, then it's kind of, you know, it could be manipulated, but an assortment of potential lawyers that could be hired. So it'll be interesting.
So I know, yeah. I see where you access the Chat GPT 4.0, the mobile app. You know, it's a mobile app. It's right there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where do I gain access to these Google resources? Is it on the Google homepage, or are there standalone products that will be offered that you know, bring to the desktop?
So Google's alternative to ChatGPT is called Gemini. And if you go to gemini.google.com, that's where you'll find it. gemini.google.com. Okay. For the most part, 80% of the time, I use ChatGPT foremost as my default AI search engine. But if it's something that's kind of like research where I need really up-to-date data, I'd rather go to Gemini to use that. And sometimes I use both to see which one do I like more. Over time, I lean towards ChatGPT's responses is more straight to the point, more clear, versus Gemini, it's a little bit more jumbled a little bit. It doesn't give me as much of a clear answer. But again, a prudent user these days would have both of those websites, both ChatGPT and Gemini, in their bookmarks, not hidden in a folder, but right there on your browser, so that you're able to quickly access it and ideally having it open at all times.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and it's I can see what you're saying. So, well, listen, you're going to educate me. I already feel smarter than when I sat down this morning. So I'm very much excited about continuing to explore this with you, and I'll be a bit of a guinea pig. You're further down that stretch than I am, so I'm very excited about that. And so something to really look forward to in the coming episodes here of The Law Entrepreneur. What do we have in mind for next week?
Next week, we're going to continue the value with the top AI tools your law firm needs right now. Okay.
There you go.
I have a resource of over 100 AI tools that's stored in Lawyer Club. We haven't really pitched Lawyer Club. It's our free community for lawyers. If you want all the resources you could possibly imagine for free, just go to joinlawyerclub.com. Be able to get access to our community. And once you join our community, if you go under classroom, you'll find a little section called Best AI Tools for Lawyers. There's over 100 lawyers that I've handpicked specifically for law firm owners and lawyers. That's there. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to highlight at least five of those top AI tools that I think are crucial that every lawyer should be using now.
Wow. I'm very much looking forward to that. So, all right. Well, that'll wrap things up for today. I want to thank you again, Sam, for being with us and agreeing to take on this responsibility as we move forward. I couldn't, as I said, be more excited about passing that baton on. And I look forward to having everybody join us again next week for episode 403 of The Law Entrepreneur. And until then, thanks so much to my friend Sam and to our listeners.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.